Hello and welcome to Southern Gospel Conversations. Take a few minutes to settle in and enjoy today's podcast. Here's your host, Southern Gospel fan, record collector, and radio contributor, Nicholas Wilkie.
Well, hello everybody and welcome to the Southern Gospel Conversations podcast. I'm your host, Nicholas Wilkie, and today we have a great tenor singer and a great guy that I'm honored to call friend with me on the show. His name is David Sutton. David, how are you, brother?
Man, you said David Sutton, but you also said great tenor, so I think you got the wrong guy.
No, I've got the right guy.
Man, I appreciate the compliment. I really do. And man, thank you so much for having me. This is great. I really appreciate it a lot.
No doubt, man. I'm glad to have you on, and I'm looking forward to it.
Absolutely.
Sure. Hey, man, well, I'm sure a lot of people, in fact, most people listening to this will know who you are, but in case there is someone listening to this that does not know who you are, introduce yourself. Tell me who you are, maybe about your family and where you live and all that stuff.
Well, David Sutton, I've been singing gospel music now for 36 years, and I'm sure maybe we'll go through a little of that detail in some of the questions and answers.
Yep.
But I've been married now for 31 years to my wife, Shay. Very blessed to have her as a wife. She's an incredible person. Very thankful for her. We've got two daughters, Mallory and Abby. Mallory's 28 and Abby is, 28 and Abby's 22. Mallory is married and has given us two grandbabies already. I got a little grandbaby boy, Jack. That he'll be 2 years old in July. And then I just had a brand new baby girl as of yesterday. She was 6 weeks old, and her name is Ella Shay. They named her after my wife.
That's awesome.
And, so my youngest daughter, she's getting married in September. So me and my wife are about to become empty nesters for the first time in 28 years. So that should be interesting, but no, we're excited about it. Love our two girls, two pets, can't leave them out. Got a dog, Winston, and a little dog named Olive. Winston's my buddy. He, golly, that dog's my best friend. Is that crazy or what? I jump in the truck, you want to go, and buddy, he takes off. He goes everywhere I go in town. So love my dog, Winston. So that's pretty
awesome.
Much my life. That's me. That's my family.
Yep. Very good, man. No doubt about it. Well, let's go back many years ago now. Tell me how you became a fan of gospel music before you actually started singing, because I'm sure you probably became a fan of it before you started singing, right?
Well, I was always around it. My dad was always in a local quartet. He started out with a group called the Watchman Quartet from Goldsboro, North Carolina. That's where I'm originally from. And when I was 9 years old, my dad, before he got saved, he was singing secular music. And they had just an incredible band. And they put together a little program one night for a Ruatan club. And it was just some Christmas music. They had to do a Christmas program for them. So they did. Well, the guy that played drums with my dad all those years in his high school years and during that college age year, he played drums for him that night. I was 9 years old. And he saw me, man. I was just watching every move he made on those drums. Well, he went to my dad afterwards when they were tearing everything down to get ready to go home. And he said, Denny, let your boy take them drums home with him. And, man, I was like a kid at Christmas. So I took those drums home, set them up in the middle of the living room floor, and I would put the Watchman Quartet CDs or cassette tapes at that time. I would put Gold City's cassette tapes in, the Kingsmen, Cathedral, Singing Americans. Those were my top four groups during that period growing up as just a younger kid. Well, within about, I guess, probably 3 to 4 months, my dad noticed that I was really taking on to it really quick. And my dad's group, the Watchmen, they practiced every Thursday night. And he come in from work one day. I was in there on the drums. He said, David, why don't you pack your drums up and go to practice with me this week? I want to show the guys what you're doing. And, man, I set those drums up that night in that old workshop and where they practiced every week. And played along with them that night at the age of 9 years old. And from that time on, from the time I was 9 until the time I was 18 when I graduated high school, I only missed, I think, one weekend going out. My youth from my church were going to youth camp, and I said, "Guys, I really want to go to youth camp." And they said, "You go to youth camp. We'll find somebody to fill in." So, Nicholas, every weekend from 9 until 18, I was with my dad's quartet, the Watchman,
Wow.
playing gospel music in churches and schools. And we traveled all over the eastern part of North Carolina. We typically had somewhere every Saturday and Sunday. We had some Fridays, practiced every Thursday night. So that was my life, man. I had friends at school, but I didn't really go out and do the party thing, I guess you might say, during those years because I was always on the road playing. And man, I would sit behind that set of drums night after night. And you asked how I fell in love with it. The reason I fell in love with it was because I'd sit behind that set of drums and I'd watch four men, stand up in front of me, and they were singing Southern gospel music, quartet style, and they were doing a lot of cover stuff by other quartets in Southern gospel. And so I knew every song by everybody because of that. But man, I saw, even at a young age, I saw how the music touched people. I saw how people were encouraged. Man, I would see altars filled. I saw people give their lives to Christ through it. And so I fell in love for it. I had a passion for it. And during that period is when I got saved. I got saved at 13 at my home church back in Goldsboro, New Hope Friends Church. We had a revival one week. And of course, here I am playing drums with a Southern Gospel quartet, living a clean life, a good life. But I knew there was something missing that morning. And so that's when I give my heart and life to Jesus. And all through my high school years, through ninth grade, all the way through 12th grade, man, I would literally pray every night that God would open a door. I really wanted to sing. I enjoyed playing, but they started getting me up every so often and singing one or two songs a night. And my passion, I think, was more singing than it was to continue on the drums. So man, again, I'd pray and pray. Well, I went and heard the Kingsmen one night. I guess I was probably, I'm guessing I was 15 or 16 years old, maybe 17. I think 15, 16. I went and heard the Kingsmen in Fayetteville, North Carolina. And it was during the period, I think it was probably, I'd say around 86, 87, they were doing the song Stand Up, the song Gary Shepherd used to sing. Well, I don't know if you remember, of course, I don't even know that you're old enough to remember that, but during that period, Hamill, when the song was going, man, it was always a crowd pleaser. It was the barn burner for the Kingsmen. People were on their feet. And Hamill was known for during that time, he would point people out of the audience and get them on stage to sing. And for some reason that night, man, he pointed at me and motioned for me to come on stage. And so I jumped on stage with a few other people and I stood down by Gary Shepherd. I started singing with Gary, and Jim Hamill heard me singing. And so we walked off stage and they took an intermission, and I was walking by the Kingsman's product table. And I don't know if you ever knew Jim Hamill, but he was,
I didn't.
loud, boisterous, and he was known for stuff like that. I walked by their table and he saw me. He said, "Hey, kid, come here." And I turned around. He said, "Get over here." And I went over there. Of course, Jim Hamill was being Jim Hamill. And he looked at me, he said, "Do you know a Kingsman song?" I said, "Yes, sir." Of course, my knees start knocking. He said, "Well, I tell you what, you be out there in the audience where you were sitting a minute ago." He said, "And I'm going to call you up the second half. I heard you down there singing beside Gary. I'm going to have you sing for these people." And that was during the time Arthur was with him, Arthur Rice. Was playing bass and doing some backup, some of Jim Hamill's higher parts. And I think Arthur had probably told him, I think Arthur knew that I was with my dad's quartet. And so he called me up. Sure enough, man, that place, it was jam-packed that night. Big, huge auditorium, and it was packed. And he called me up, and I'm pretty sure I've talked to Arthur about it. It's so far back there. I'm pretty sure I sang "Look for Me at Jesus' Feet." Matter of fact, I know that was it. That had to been what I did. And I was scared to death, but I sang that night. And honestly, man, from that night on, I was just captured. I was hooked. That was my passion. All I wanted to do my junior, senior year, that's all I could think about was finding a group to sing with. And in 1990, 2 weeks after I graduated high school, the door opened for me, and that's when I started with the Anchorman. So that takes you up to that part, and if you have some questions from there, I'll answer that as well for you.
Well, finish your history in gospel music. So you were
Okay.
with the Watchman, and then
I was with the Watchman.
you were with the Anchorman.
With the Anchorman, prayed all through high school that God would open the door, and no joke, my dad got home from work one day and the telephone rang, and I was sitting in the living room and I heard him answer the phone, and I just kind of overheard the conversation on his end, but I could tell that whoever he was talking to was calling about a tenor singer, needing a tenor singer. And so my dad hangs up the phone. I said, "Who was that?" He said it was Terry Carter with the Anchorman, which the Anchorman were from my hometown, and I knew Terry from singing with Anchorman. I said, "Is he wanting to hire you to sing tenor?" He said, "No, he's actually wanting to talk with you." I said, "What?" He said, "Yeah, he basically was calling me to see if I thought you were ready, if I thought you could do it." And he said he wanted me to sit down and talk with you first, and if it's something that you're interested in, they would like to sit down and talk with you, and they would like to hear you sing. And man, I was just, my goodness, I was beside myself because, this was my dream, and it looked like my dream was fixing to come true. And so anyway, I called Terry. Terry come and picked me up one day. Me and him drove around Goldsboro in his car. I sang a few songs for him, just driving down the road. And he said, "Well, I want you to come meet with me and Bonnie." That was Bonnie English. I don't know if you remember Bonnie or not, but
I do.
Bonnie, he's Mike English's brother. So it was Terry and Bonnie. Of course, Bonnie was singing lead. Terry was singing baritone. Jody Medford was with the group at that time, but I knew he was getting ready to leave. And so anyway, I went and met with Bonnie and Terry and Ray Bullard. Ray Bullard was actually the owner of the group. He was kind of the guy in the background that a lot of people, industry people knew him, but a lot of the, the audience didn't know Ray. But he was the guy kind of in the background, background that kind of kept everything going on the manager part side of it. And met with those three guys, and they were going to be singing in Goldsboro at Goldsboro High School that week. So they said, "Why don't you come over and just see what we do and hear the group? And we may even get you up on stage to sing one in front of the people." Well, I went that night. It couldn't have been a better setting for me because my dad's group, the Watchmen, man, they were very well known in that area. And they had a huge following in that area. And sure enough, I got into Goldsboro High School that night. That auditorium was jam-packed. And man, the Anchorman walked out that night. And that's when David Walker was singing tenor and Jody Medford was singing bass, but they were both getting ready to leave. And they were going through, a major personnel change there. And man, they walked down on that stage and opened with the old hymn, Farther Along, just four part, pretty harmony. And I sit there just thinking, man, this is where I'm supposed to be. This is it. And I don't know, about halfway through the program, Terry said, he told the audience, "Ladies and gentlemen, we've got a guy in the audience tonight, and I'm gonna get him up here to sing a song for you." And he said, "It's David Sutton, the drummer for the Watchman Quartet." And man, when he said that, I'm just saying what happened. There was a pretty big applause, pretty big roar in that place because again, people knew me from my dad. They knew me from playing the drums with the Watchman for
That's
almost.
awesome.
10 years of my life, almost, or 8 or 9 years. Anyway, they got me up and I sang the old song Child of the King. And again, it couldn't have been a better setting because the people knew me, the response was really good. And Terry and Bonnie saw that night. And after the concert, they said, "Well, the job is yours if you want it." So he announced to the people that night that I was probably going to be the new tenor for the Anchorman. So anyway, moving forward, I stayed with the Anchorman. I was only with the Anchorman about a little over a year and a half. Larry Stewart came in to sing bass. He was there for about 6 months. So it was myself, Bonnie, Terry, and Larry. And Larry was only there 6 months, and Larry had been driving the bus for the Singing Americans, and was a great bass singer. And so they hired him. Well, Larry decided to go back to the Singing Americans and drive and sing some. They'd get Larry up some to sing. So Jeff Chapman came in. So for a little over a year, I had the opportunity to sing with Jeff. It was myself, Terry, Bonnie, and Jeff. And so the Singing Americans, it was funny, man. I followed David Walker in three different groups. I went with him after I went with the Anchorman after David left. Singing Americans, Charlie Burke kind of reformed the Singing Americans when Dwayne Burke, his son that was with the Singing Americans all those years, he decided to come off the road. Well, Charlie had always kind of wanted more of a male, just a traditional quartet. So he had put a group together, and David Walker left the Anchorman, went there. Well, Larry was going to be a part of this new lineup, and Charlie was really wanting to go very traditional. And so David was leaving. They had hired Dave Harville to sing, and they had hired well, Scott Whitener and Larry Stewart. They called me, and I went and met with them, and I ended up taking that position. And of course, we went through some personnel change. The final lineup of that group, I was there 2.5 years. The final lineup of that group was myself, let's see, Dell Forbes, Buddy Burton, and Larry Stewart. And actually, the last, I think, 4 or 5 months, actually, Dale left and David Hill come in. So it'd been a lot of personnel change there. But in 1994, Charlie Burke had the Singing Americans all those years. And he just decided, Buddy decided to go back to pastoring. And Dale had moved on to go pastor. So Charlie just said, "You know what? I think it's time to pull the Singing Americans off the road." So I was with the final Singing American group that there was, and had a great little run there. But when Charlie decided to pull it off the road, here I am now. I'm back to square one, wanting to sing tenor, but have no clue what kind of direction I was going to go in, where the Lord was leading me. I had started dating my wife at that time. We had started dating. And I mean, I didn't know where to go. I had no income, nothing. Well, her mom and dad had a basement. They lived in right outside of Chattanooga, Tennessee. They had a basement with a bedroom. And they told me, they said, "Well, why don't you come here? You can stay downstairs in the basement," you know, because they did have, you know, nice bedroom, bathroom. It was a nice little place and nice little setup. And they said, "You know, until you can get things pulled together, you know, decide what direction you're going to go, see what kind of doors open." So for about 3 months, I worked on a car lot for a friend of theirs. He had a farm and he had a car lot. So I'd work on the farm 1 week, I'd work on the car lot the next. I was back and forth, car lot. I was washing cars, I was detailing cars, I was working on the farm, whatever it took to pay my bills, which at that time, basically all I had was some insurance and a car payment. That's pretty much all I had. And me and my father-in-law now, he wasn't my father-in-law then, he was my wife's, obviously, dad. Me and him were walking through Walmart one night in Fort Oglethorpe, Georgia. And he gets a phone call. And here we go back to the phone call. My dad got the first phone call. Now my father-in-law's getting a phone call. And he talks to this person for a little bit, and he said, "Well, hang on, he's right here with me." And I get on the phone, and it was a lady that knew the Kingdom Heirs very well. And she said, "David," she said, "I called your father-in-law. I had his number," or well, it wasn't my father. She knew I was dating his daughter. And she said, "I was talking to Steve French today with the Kingdom Heirs, and they're looking for a tenor." And I said, "Wasn't David Walker there?" She said, "David's leaving." And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, here I go. The third time I'm getting ready to follow David Walker again,
Oh, wow.
which was just crazy. And she said, "I had called Kirk Talley when the Singing Americans were coming off the road. The day I called Kirk, he was in the recording studio with the Kingdom Heirs. And I told Kirk, I said, Kirk," I had met Kirk when I was with the Singing Americans when he was doing solo work. And I said, told him, I said, Kirk, sing Americans Come Off the Road. If you hear anything, please let me know, man. I want to sing so bad. So the girl's name was Jackie that called my father-in-law, and she said, if you want Steve French's number, or I can give him your number. And I said, well, give him my number and have him call me. So sure enough, Steve calls me and tells me that they're getting ready to go through a change. And he asked me, what was going on with me. We had just sang with the Kingdom Heirs probably about 2 months before all this happened. So
Wow.
he had just heard me. It was really interesting thing. I met Eric Bennett that night. And that me and Eric, I don't know, we just kind of hit it off. And we stood out there, man. We talked in a long time that night. We were working a fair date. It was an outside date at a fair. Me and Eric stood there and talked, just shooting the breeze. And so Steve told me what was going on and asked me if I'd be interested in coming and trying out. I said, absolutely. He said, do you have any of our music? I said, well, believe it or not, I got y'all's cassette tape the night that we sang with y'all a couple months ago. It was the Song of Praise. It was a live recording that they did at Dollywood. It was called Song of Praise. Man, I put that cassette tape in, and I think it was 3 days later, I'm pretty sure, when I drove to Dollywood and walked through Dollywood that morning. He had left me a pass up at the front gate, and I got down to where they were at the Valley Theater. It's an outdoor theater, still there at Dollywood. That's where the Kingdom Heirs were singing at that time. And I walked up. David had already left. Well, Kirk Tally was filling in for him until they found somebody. So Kirk, they were on stage that day. And I remember Kirk sang the song One Day at a Time, the old song One Day at a Time that day. So after the concert, or after their show, I went upstage and met him. Of course, again, I had met him two months before. And I had a no joke, man. I had a little It's a little case that they used to have little cases that you could carry cassette tapes in. It was probably about a foot long, and I had that thing filled up with soundtracks. So we walked back into the back dressing room, myself, Kirk, Eric, and let's see, Clayton was still there then. Clayton was there, and Kurt. So we all walked back in the dressing room, and I don't even remember. I know I sang two or three songs. I put cassettes in and played, and they listened to me sing, and they started the next show, and almost like the Anchorman situation, Steve looked at me. He said, do you know the song One Day at a Time? And they had already done it the show before. Kirk had sang it. Well, I just so I had sang it some with the Singing Americans. I said, yeah, I know it. So he said, I'm gonna call you up on stage. So man, he called me up on stage, just like the Anchorman situation, and told the people that he was auditioning me. He said, I'm gonna audition this kid in front of you. I think I was 22 years old. He said, I'm gonna audition this kid in front of y'all, and y'all maybe gets this job today, or he doesn't get the job. So man, I sang One Day at a Time. People come to their feet and just really applauded well for me. And he said, well, you guys, y'all may have just given me my answer. So anyway, we show was over. We went to lunch together and talked and just And I've always told people, I've always kind of give Kirk Tally credit because, I mean, Kirk Tally was, God, man, at one time, dude, he was one of the greatest tenors that's ever come through gospel music. Incredible singer, incredible songwriter, and amazing communicator with an audience. And he looked at Steve that day and he said, he's your guy. He said, don't even look no further. He said, he's the guy you need to hire. And,
That's so cool.
So he hired me that day, and I think a lot of it was because of what Kirk said. And I have thanked Kirk many times for that because he basically validated me that day. And so, man, I spent almost 9 years with the Kingdom Heirs, and it was great. I have nothing bad to say about that position, man. I enjoyed it. I loved it. And I know people may be sitting here thinking right now, well, if you loved it so much, why did you leave? And all I can say was is the fact that I 100% think that God orchestrated Triumphant Quartet. As much as anything I've ever been involved in,
Yes.
during that time, myself and Eric and Jeff Stice at the time, Jeff was playing with the Kingdom Heirs. Jeff, of course, Eric was singing bass. Eric was there 11 years. I was there almost 9. And we had met a good friend of ours. Knew Louise Mandrell. Louise Mandrell had a theater in town. She did a night production show, I think 5 nights a week. here in Pigeon Forge. And she had this production show where a good friend of ours that we knew, he had gone to Louise and they had started talking about doing a praise and worship service on Sunday mornings for the tourists in the area. Because, tourists to come to town want somewhere to go to church. They're not really comfortable just walking into any church. They wanted to open the doors to the theater for this church service. And it was kind of inspired by Louise's daughter, Nicole. She's the one that kind of had the idea. So they started putting that together. Well, they started doing a worship service. They'd have different people come in and speak, and they'd have different people to come in and lead some worship, lead musics, hymns, or a couple soloists or whatever. Well, Barry, our good friend, he told Louise about us. And so I would go over there one Sunday morning and sing two or three songs. And one Sunday, Eric may go. One Sunday, Jeff may go. So we got to know Louise during that time, and we got to know Sandy Wise, the general manager of the theater. And at that time, the Blackwoods, Ron Blackwood and R.W. Blackwood and Donna and Ron's wife Shelley, they had a group, the Blackwood Singers. They were doing a morning show there. They actually had a quartet there for a period too. I think John Rulopaul sang with them during that period. Anyway, they were doing a morning gospel show. And they left and went to a different theater in town. So when that happened, Louise really wanted to keep gospel music at the theater. She wanted to keep a gospel music morning show at her theater, to continue on because it was doing very well. And so anyway, Sandy reached out, Sandy, the general manager, reached out to Jeff first about the possibility of putting a group together to come over there and do it. And Jeff come to me and Eric, so, are you guys interested in this? We said, man, we're happy where we're at, blah, blah, blah. I went through that whole thing. Well, some time went by. Then they come to Eric. Eric, y'all really need to pray about this and think about this. We think you guys could put something together and do very well. Eric come to me, come to Jeff. Man, I don't know, So finally, about the third time they come to us, I finally said, and Jeff and Eric, we all three finally said, you know what, guys? What does it hurt just to sit down and talk? And let's just go talk to them, see what they're thinking, what they're wanting to do. And Nicholas, man, we sit down with Louise and Sandy one day in Louise's living room at her home. And every time we would tell them why we couldn't do it, they'd say, no, here's why you can do it, because we can take care of that. Well, we're going to have to do this. Well, we'll take care of that. Well, we need this. Well, we're going to take care of that. There was just so many concerns and so many didn't want to hurt anybody. It was just man, it was a tough decision. And we said, you know what, we're going to really pray about this. And honestly, and I can truly say with all my heart, I've never prayed about anything in all my life as much as I did that, because I knew it was going to be so hard, especially for three of us, leaving the Kingdom Heirs at one time. I knew it was going to be hard. Anyway, we all three felt a peace about it. And so we went to him and said, we're going to do it. And that's when we all give our notices at Dollywood with the Kingdom Heirs. And so then our thinking is, okay, who in the world is going to sing lead and baritone? And instantly, all three of us at one time, our minds went to Scotty and Clayton. We knew that Scotty and Clayton were thinking about putting together their own group. They were going to do a trio. Clayton was leaving one by one. Scotty was leaving Phil Cross and Poet Voice, and they were going to just do a family thing. And just they were going to hire a tenor singer and have a trio. So we contacted them, and they turned us down. They said, no, we're going to do our thing. And we told them what we were doing, and they said, no, we're just going to do our family thing. And we said, okay. So we started putting the word out. The word started getting out through the industry that what we were doing. And so we started getting phone calls from guys, and that we had probably, I don't know, we had five or six guys lined up to come in the same day and audition. We were going to meet at First Baptist Church of Sevierville in the choir room around the piano. And so the night before auditions, Eric gets a phone call from Clayton, and he said, Eric, is it too late to come talk with you guys? And Eric just said, man, Clayton, So, man, we've already got guys lined up to come and audition. I mean, now you and Scotty, we don't feel like it's fair to these guys. We feel like we need to listen to everybody now. And Clayton said, that's okay. He said, man, Eric said, why have you changed your mind? He said, Eric, honestly, we've tried different tenors out. Nothing's worked out to where we felt good about it. He said, we were sitting around our kitchen table eating, me and Scotty, my daughter, and my wife, and everything was real quiet. And my wife, or I can't remember if it was his wife, Michelle, or if his daughter, Jordan, one of them said, what's wrong? Why is everybody so quiet? And they said, well, all we can do is think about what's going on with Eric and David and Jeff. And it was going to be Integrity Quartet. That's who we were going to be. And they said, well, you know what? If y'all don't have a piece of what y'all are doing, you need to call them. If that's where your heart is and where your mind is, you need to call them and talk to them. So anyway, long story short, they showed up that day as well with the other guys. And we went in that choir room. We would call one of the lead singers in and one of the baritone singers in. And we'd sit around the piano and we'd sing a song. And we would even call Clayton in, and instead of Scotty singing, we'd bring somebody else. We were mixing them up. And finally, we got down to basically the end where we had heard everybody. We finally said, all right, Clayton and Scotty, y'all come on in here. And man, we got around the piano, Nicholas and myself and Eric and Scotty and Clayton and Jeff. I said, Jeff, let's sing the old song, Hide Thou Me. Well, I sing through the verse, and man, when we started on that chorus, it was just, I'm going to be honest with you, it was magic. It had a chemistry. It felt right. We just knew instantly, this is the group. And so everybody left that day, and we called, obviously we told Clayton and Scotty to stick around, and thanked everybody for coming. Had some great singers come. But we just knew they were the guys, so we sit down and talk the logistics and what our goal was and what our passion and our mission was. At the theater, we knew we would go out and do a few dates, throughout the week as we were doing the theater. I think it was three mornings and one night, I think, or maybe it was four mornings, and we were there every Sunday night, and then we were there during the day. So we knew we'd have some dates we could go on the road. So what happened there, we were with Louise 3 years. And Louise, her husband was having some health issues, so she needed to walk away from the theater and move back to Nashville with him to have, some care, hospitals there that he needed. So they went back to Nashville, and she sold the theater to Fee Hedrick Entertainment. And when she sold the theater, part of that deal was to keep us on. And so we stayed with Fee Hedrick for 2 years, two more years. So we were at the theater a total of five. And I don't know, that last year, man, we just started really praying what direction we needed to go. Louise tried to get us to leave the theater when she left. She said, guys, you guys are worship leaders. She said, you guys need to be out there more in the industry. Y'all need to be in churches. That's just, I can tell that's where your passion, where your heart is. So again, we start praying during that 4th year, and we started doing a lot more traveling on the road. And it got to the point we were turning dates down because of the theater. And we felt like at that period in the group, we started out as Integrity Quartet. We went through a name change because of some copyright issues and come up with the name Triumphant, and went with Triumphant Quartet. We just knew it was time. We knew it was time to leave the theater. So at the end of 2007, that's when we hit the road full time, and group's been together. October will be a full. We're in our 24th year. So in October, we will finish our 24th year, and we were. So that's basically the history, man. Scotty Inman was here for 21 of those years, and so it was a very unusual thing that we were able, people would always bring up the fact that we had the same four singers. And of course, Jeff, was there a big part of it. I think he left back in either 2012 or 13, I think it was. I may be wrong on that, but he was with us for several years, and I had two or three different piano players after him, but the four vocalists up front stuck together for 21 years. I was always scared when somebody bring it up because I knew the inevitable. I said, if I had what David wants, we would all four retire together one day. But because of age difference, I knew that probably wouldn't happen. And honestly, I knew if anyone would leave, it would be Scotty. Scotty was the youngest. I'm 54. Scotty's exactly 10 years younger than me. So, I just felt like if anybody would ever leave, it would be Scotty because I felt like he would want to protect his career for his future. And sure enough, that's what happened. Scotty come to us. That was one of the hardest days for me in the history of Triumphant, was the day that he told us we were on the way home one night. He said, "Guys, I need to talk to y'all." And he said, well, we were all in the front lounge, and he said, "Guys, I just feel like it's time." And as soon as he said those words, I knew what he was fixing to say. He said, I think it's time for me to move on. He said, "I think I'm wanting to try a solo thing." Scotty was wanting to do more of his songs, which I totally understood. Triumphant couldn't do all of his songs. I think he was protecting his future. Again, we get asked all the time, "How long are y'all gonna sing?" Well, as long as the Lord gives me a voice and people want us to come sing, then that's how long I'm gonna sing.
Right.
Unless something just crazy happens. But I want to sing as long as I physically can sing. I don't know that I want to do it 150 days a year, but I do want to continue to sing for him and tell people about him. So anyway, Sean Barber came in after Scotty. What a godsend. Sean was just he was the perfect fit in every way. It's just been amazing to sit back and see how God has worked through our group and through each individual guy, and just very blessed. We're very blessed. Man, I've said a lot. I've said a lot. Hope I haven't said too much, but you told me to go through the history. So that is my history from 1990 until present.
Man, that is awesome. You've been blessed, David. That's no doubt about it. You've been blessed.
Yes, sir.
For sure. And Triumphant has. I mean, and I know y'all don't, obviously, y'all don't sing for this and everything, but y'all just awards and all that stuff. Just y'all been so blessed.
Well, we had a great run there with the awards, and yes, everybody wants to be recognized. And let's get real. If you're human, you want to be recognized, and we were recognized for many years for many awards, and it just showed us that the Lord was working through us, and the people obviously saw that, and I hope they continue to see that. And yeah, it's not about the awards. We all know that, but it is nice to be recognized, and we're very thankful that the people have that much confidence in us to allow us to receive the ones that we received for all those years. Very thankful. Very blessed.
Yes, sir. No doubt about it. Well, I put a post on Facebook saying that I'll be interviewing you, and I asked everyone if they had any questions for you, and I got several of those.
Uh-oh, that's scary.
Yeah.
All right, throw them at me.
Let's go back to the Watchmen days. Somebody put a comment on Facebook and said this: "What are your favorite memories of starting out playing drums, occasionally singing, and learning to play harmonica with the Watchmen?"
Yeah, favorite things. Well, I think I've already mentioned one is that's during that period is when I fell in love with it. Because, like I said, watching four men stand up front line there and seeing gospel, seeing people saved because of it, seeing people encouraged because of the lyrics. That was my favorite part. And of course, I was a kid, man. I was like a kid at Christmas every weekend when I got to sit on stage and play a set of drums with a group. And so that was great. That is during the period that I first ran across the harmonica. The group would go every year to Nashville. We did a recording every year in Nashville, Tennessee, and that's the one week that I love because I got out of school to go to Nashville to do recordings, and they allowed me to do it through the school system was because they knew what I was doing. They knew it was a great learning experience for me. And we would always hire studio musicians just like we do today. And that particular year, they hired a guy by the name of Terry McMillan. One of the greatest harmonica players that ever went through Nashville, Tennessee. Not only a great harmonica player, but he was a great percussionist as well. Well, we had hired Terry to play harmonica and play percussion on this recording. And I guess I was probably, I'm thinking I was around 14. People ask me all the time, and I think I was probably 14, 15 years old when we went and did that session in Nashville. Just kind of like the guy with the drums that saw me playing the drums and noticed I took an interest. That day, I sit there in that studio watching Terry McMillan. He had hair down about his shoulders, past his shoulders, real long hair, curly, perm-looking hair. Walked in that day with a little box and opened it up, and it had about 12, 14 harmonicas in it. He had all of his percussion stuff set up. And man, he was one of them guys when he played, he just danced all over. And people laugh at me now when I get into a song, and I think I got it from that. It was ingrained in my head, in my memory. And I watched Terry that day. Well, Terry noticed that I was taking an interest. Again, he comes to me before he leaves that day. He said, "Hey, buddy," he said, I could tell you really like that harmonica playing." And he knew I was a drummer. He said, "I knew you'd like the percussion stuff because I know you're a drummer." He said, "You need to go home and get you a harmonica and learn how to play the harmonica." Well, I get home and my granddad used to play a harmonica. And he would play it in front of the grandkids every now and then. And he had given me an old harmonica of his. And I remember that harmonica was, there was a toy box at my mom and dad's that obviously at one time it was my toy box. And I remember throwing that harmonica in that toy box. And we got home off that trip from Nashville. I dug through that toy box and I found that old harmonica at the very bottom of that toy box. And man, I started blowing on that thing. I'd drive my mom and dad. I drove my brother crazy. It's an ugly thing when you don't really know what you're doing. So I would play it and play it. And the Dixie Melody Boys, they were from my area, Kinston, North Carolina. They had a harmonica player, Larry DeLauder. And
Yeah.
I went one night to hear Dixie Melody Boys in Goldsboro, and Larry pulled the harmonica out. And once again, man, I was mesmerized, and I watched Larry play it. So again, I get home and I just start fooling with it. And the very first song I ever learned to play on the harmonica was "Amazing Grace." People say, "Well, how'd you learn?" I said, "Well, honestly," and I tell people now, I said, "Take the harmonica, find the first note, and go ba 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 ba," and just find each note. And that's what I did, and I kept doing that over and over and over and over again until I started kind of getting the feel for it and understanding the harmonica and kind of how it worked. You've got the push and you've got the draw, and you got to use your breathing. The tongue's involved, putting it over certain holes, and I just kind of started from that, listening to other players, and started playing, and that's how the harmonica come about. So that's two of my favorite things, back in my early days, is falling in love with Southern gospel through that period, through four men singing, and then falling in love with the harmonica because I had the opportunity to go into Nashville to do a tracking session, and saw Terry McMillan playing. And fell in love with the harmonica. So that's two of the greatest things for me. And also during that period is when I got saved, when I was
Yes,
13.
sir. That's awesome. And that's the best thing right there. That's the best thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I was gonna say, while you were talking, I was thinking, you mentioned Larry DeLauder. Man, he is an unbelievable harmonica player.
They say Larry used to lay in the back of the bus on the floor and just play all the time. Practice. He practiced all the time. And I've met Larry. I know. I got to play on stage with Larry, and Larry's incredible. Yeah, he's one of the greatest to me that ever come along. He really is. So I
Yeah, from what
listen
I
to him a
remember, he was
lot.
great.
I listen to Larry a lot. I listen to Terry McMillan, Buddy Green. I've listened to a lot of his stuff. There was a guy that used to be in a show here at Country Tonight Theater in town, Mike. I can't remember Mike's last name right off the top of my head, but I talked to him several times. And so those are four guys that I really looked up to in the harmonica world. And Adam Crowd, my goodness, Adam's great. I listen to Adam any chance I get. Just another great harmonica player as well.
Yeah, no doubt. And Adam's a great guy too. He's a friend of
Yes, he
mine.
is.
Love
He
Adam.
is. He's a good one.
Here's another Facebook question. It says, and this is about your Singing Americans days.
Yeah.
It says, How did you survive traveling with Larry Stewart, Dale Forbes, and Buddy Burton back during your Singing Americans days?
Oh my goodness. Buddy Burton, he's a hoot. If you've ever met Buddy, or if you've never met Buddy, you need to meet Buddy. Buddy, honestly, man, I learned a lot from Buddy. Buddy, traveled back with the Statesmen, Masters Five. He was with those groups. He had a great career in gospel music, and then he went on to, to start pastoring. But I love Buddy. I would watch Buddy every night. Buddy knew how to command a crowd. He had it definitely had a gift for that. And Buddy worked with me a lot vocally during that time. Of course, I was young, had more of the little boy sound, a little thin tenor, and Buddy started trying to work with me to broaden my tone some. And one thing he taught me was to be David, not to try to be somebody else. I went through that phase that I would try to be another tenor singers that I grew up listening to. And I realized during that period when Buddy would talk to me about that was the fact that, I needed to become me, not try to be somebody else, and just sing with the God-given talent that the Lord's given me, and
And
just
you have
become.
accomplished that, by the way.
Well, thank you for that. I really appreciate it. I think you can pull from other people. I still listen to other singers this day. We were with Brian Free and Assurance last night at Singing in the Sun in Myrtle Beach, and Brian was a hero of mine, man. I listened to Brian every day in my car driving down the road when I was, in high school. I listened to Brian Free. I listened to Gary Shepherd. I listened to Danny Funderburk. I listened to Kirk Talley. I listened to Jim Murray. These guys, man, they were just heroes of mine. And I tried to pull something from all of them. Dole Harper, my very first
Yes.
week out with the Anchorman, Dole was singing, oh my goodness, what's the group that he was singing with? Trailblazers, the Trailblazers. We were on a quick concert with the Trailblazers. Dole heard me sing that night. Dole, not Dole, Dole heard me sing that night. He come to me afterwards, and I started picking his brain, and he started giving me breathing techniques and just things like that. Brian Free, I would pick his brain, and it just guys like that would pour into me. I taught, man, I love Danny Funderburk. Good night, one of the greatest tenors of all time, in my opinion. Just for different reasons, to have the power that he had, the clarity that he had, and could turn around from hitting a big power note to singing something just easy and pretty. I watched those guys. Kirk Talley as a communicator, and again, these guys mean the world to me to this day, and I tell them as often as I can. I've been doing it 36 years, but I still look up to these guys. And when I was standing on stage last night with Brian Free, and I'm sitting here again 36 years later, and I'm sitting here thinking, man, I'm standing on stage with my heroes. And so very honored, very thankful.
And those are some of your tenor singing influences, huh?
Absolutely, absolutely. And back to Singing Americans, Larry Stewart, man, when I first went to Singing Americans, goodness, I lived with him and his wife for the first 6 months. I stayed at their house with them. They gave me a bedroom to stay in because I was single and I was young kid. I was 22 years old and living life and happy. And so Larry, me and Larry become really good friends during that period because of that. And Dale Forbes, I had known Dale with a local group over in Eastern North Carolina. He was with a group called the Laymen. And I always thought Dale Forbes was as good a lead singer as there was out there. And I still believe that to this day. He's just an incredible singer and an incredible guy. So thankful to see him in a position now with the Guardians. I think he's going to do very well there, and thankful to see him back out here. He preached for several years, and I always thought Dale may end up becoming a preacher back in our Singing American days. He just had that passion, and he had the opportunity to do that. The Lord used him well there, and now he's getting to sing again, and he's doing an incredible job. So
Yes, he is.
those three guys, they were like brothers to me. And that's one thing that I will say. A lot of times people will leave groups and sometimes never speak again, sometimes just go their separate ways. But I can honestly say we've got a Singing American text thread still to this day. Myself, Larry, Buddy, Dale, Taylor Barnes played bass with us, and Joe Lane played piano. And we text each other every so often. A picture will pop up, a memory, and We'll text about it Christmas time, wishing everybody, Merry Christmas. So I'm thankful that we've been able to keep a good friendship and a great relationship after all these years and still stay in contact with each other. Pretty incredible.
Oh yeah, no doubt about it. I love it. Well, here's another Facebook question as far as the Singing Americans goes. And this question was submitted by Buddy Burton. He said,
Oh no.
"How did you scare me one night?" So in other words, how did you scare Buddy Burton one night? Do you know what he's talking about?
Oh goodness. Well, I can think of two different Oh wow. I can think of two different things that I did to Buddy that I got him pretty good. So the
Tell him.
first one was, man, I'm a small guy. And I was even smaller then. Man, I was like a little pencil back when I was 22 years old. We were riding down the road one night. It was after a concert, and I remember one night I got up in his bunk. He was in like I think the middle bunk there. And man, I got back into the back of that bunk as far as I could go. I mean, I was literally just wrapped up in that thing. Well, because I knew it was getting about time for Buddy. I knew about what time he'd go to bed. Man, he crawled. He started crawling in that bunk, and when he did, I was back tucked up in there, and I just reached out and grabbed him, and I screamed. Man, I thought I was going to give the old man a heart attack that night. And he never forgot that. And the only other thing I can think about, again, we all had our individual closets on that bus, and they weren't big hardly at all. Well, I got in that closet. I was able to squeeze myself in that closet and get back behind the clothes. And obviously, you know what happened when he opened the closet to start getting ready for the concert that night. Here I am, and I jump out at him. So that's the two
Yeah.
things. One of those stories, I'm sure, is what he was thinking about because he never forgot about those two stories because I literally scared him to
Oh man.
death.
Well, here's one more funny story you can share, and I believe this one was after Triumph and it had already started. Your buddy Jeff Kenyon posted on Facebook and asked you to share the tow truck story.
Oh my goodness. Oh, wow, man, if you had video right now, I could show it to you because somebody brought me this later. So we had broke down one night, just like every other group. The buses are always going to break down. We're sitting on the side of the interstate. I don't even remember what was wrong with the bus, but we worked and worked trying to get it going. And we finally realized, man, we're not going to get this thing going. We're going to have to call a tow truck. So Eric said, "Hey, David, why don't you run up on the bus and get on the computer and see if you can find a tow truck somewhere around here." And so, man, I got on that bus. Of course, everything was going crazy. We were flying. We were just trying to figure out what to do. We had to get to our next date. So our minds are just fried. Our brains are fried. So I get on the bus and I get on. I start typing real fast. Tow truck in the area, tow truck in the area. And I had been on there quite a while just looking. I'm thinking, why can I not find a tow truck? And I can't believe I'm fixing to tell this story for everybody to know because it's really embarrassing. Eric comes on and says, "Man, have you found anything yet?" I said, "Eric, man, I can't find a tow." He said, "David, there's got to be a tow truck in this area." Dude, he comes over. He comes over to the computer. He said, "David, you got TOE instead of TOW." So I had put the wrong tow in. So we change it to TOW and bam, tow truck companies coming up everywhere. So
Right.
now I've got a here in my office, I've got a little car thing that looks like a toe off a person's foot, but it's hooked to a tow truck. So a fan that found that out. I don't even remember who brought it to me. They brought it to me one night. So that's the tow truck story. That story was told on stage a few times to get a good laugh and to embarrass me. So, and yes,
Yeah.
it's very embarrassing. Spelling was never my thing, obviously.
Well, that's funny. Well, I know there's been a lot of funny stuff that has happened on the road during your days of singing, but I also know there's been a lot of touching times probably where maybe the Lord used you to minister to somebody at the product table or the altar or anything like that. Do you have a story like that you can share?
I don't know any one story that's happened. I guess I wish I'll think about this later, and I'm sure I'll think, man, why didn't I tell that? There's been so many situations. We, of course, obviously, we get letters all the time from people, and but we have people come up to the table and share stories with us. But I think the one that probably jumps out to me the most is had a guy show up at a concert one night, and I don't even remember what year this was, how long it was, how long ago it was. It was right after the song "Amazing God" came out. I don't know if you remember the song "Amazing God" that I
I
recorded.
do. Great song.
Love the song, one of my favorite all-time songs that I've ever had the opportunity to sing, and maybe because of this story. If this song, what this song did to this one man, just still blows my mind to this day. Man started sharing the story with me that he got up that morning to go to work. He drove a truck for a living, got in his truck, took off that day, was going through just a horrible time in his life. Didn't really go into detail with me, just told me he was at the end of his life, didn't know what he was going to do, was just over it. And basically, when he left and started driving his truck that day, he left with the intent of taking his life that day. And didn't say what he had in the truck, but just shared the fact that he had things in the truck that day that's how he was going to take his life. He turned the radio on that day and started scrolling through the radio, and he heard the song "Amazing God." So obviously he was scrolling through the radio and he ran across the gospel station, and the song "Amazing God" was playing that day. And he said that that song that day, listening to those lyrics, literally saved his life.
Wow.
And to know that you're singing a song, although I didn't do it personally, but the song that I was attached to because of the lyric in that song and because the way the Lord used that song that day through his Holy Spirit, it saved this man's life. And this man had the opportunity to share his story with me. And I don't remember the man's name. I wish I'd have got more information from him that day so I could have stayed in contact. And so if this person's listening, gosh, I would love to talk to you, because that was an incredible story that I found out that that the song "Amazing God" had done this for this gentleman, that basically it saved his life. And so that's probably the story that sticks out to me the most. Now, we've had story after story. I have people all the time come to me and said, "You'll never know what, how this song got me through the week." Had a person come up here a while back, talking about the song "God Is Listening." Tell me they listened to it every day that week, because they had been in a place in their life that they were praying and praying and praying about a situation and just didn't feel like the Lord was listening to them, but they knew the song and heard of the song. And it was helping them get through a certain situation in their life. So just stories like that, man, that's what keeps us going. I get tired. I get tired just like everybody else. Yes, I'm thankful and I'm very blessed that the Lord allows me to do what I do. But just like any other job, yes, it's a ministry, but it is a job. It's our career. It's how
It
we
is.
make our living. It's how we pay our bills, how we take care of our families. So it's just like anything else. You can get tired in it. And but I hope I never get tired of it. And so again, very blessed for the stories that we hear from people, how the music encourages them. I think we're encouragers more than anything. Yes, we see people come to know Christ through our music and at some of the concerts, not every night. I think one day we're going to find out how many people have been saved under the ministry. But I think as much as anything for Triumphant, I feel like we are a group of encouragement as much as anything. Yes, we want to see people saved, but I think our end goal at the end of the night is hopefully if you sit in a Triumphant concert, we hope that you can leave that night very encouraged.
That's great, man. I love it. Well, here's another Facebook question. And this is going to be special to your heart, I'm sure. No doubt about it. Talk about your dad's influence on your life. That was a Facebook question.
Buddy, that's a that's wow. We could sit here all day on that one, but Of course, I don't know when this is going to air, but today is the 21st of April when we're doing this interview. April 22nd will be 1 year, 1 year ago that my dad passed. I'll always remember it because it's my wife's birthday. I was in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, singing in the sun last year. I woke up that morning on the 22nd, celebrating my wife's birthday over the phone, wishing her a happy birthday. And that night, my dad suffered with pulmonary fibrosis for 4 years. And just an ugly disease. It's something you can't get over. It just gradually gets worse. So he knew his days were numbered when he found out, 4 years before he passed. In Myrtle Beach, South Carolina last year, and singing in the sun. We always meet, all the artists always meet right before the concert. And we were all standing there in a big circle getting ready to pray. And I noticed Eric kind of broke the circle and went over to the side. I saw he got a phone call, which is very unusual for Eric just to walk off with a phone call. And found out the reason Eric walked off because he looked down and noticed that it was my brother. He knew my dad wasn't doing well. And my brother had called Eric to have him talk to me because he knew we were getting ready to go on stage. He knew he didn't know how I was going to react. So Eric came over and said, "David, I need to talk to you." So he called me off to the side. And man, your dad just passed. And Nicholas, that's a phone call, man. You never want to receive a phone call like that anytime, but when you're out on the road 4 or 5 hours away from home where you can't get there, gosh, it's tough.
Right.
Earlier that morning, I was sitting on the loading dock, and just yesterday, I walked on the loading dock. You know, people say, "How are you doing since your dad passed?" "Man, I'm doing good. You know, I have my good days and bad days. You know, I'll be riding down the road and something just triggered and I just start crying." When we get there yesterday after we had sat up, I was walking up on the loading dock. I was right by myself, nobody around. And I looked over and I seen a folding chair sitting in the same place that last year I sat there at about 2 o'clock that afternoon talking to my dad on the phone and not knowing at the time it was going to be the very last time I got to talk to him here on this earth. And talking to my dad, he was asking me, my daddy always loved to find out how things were going on the road. He knew I was at Singing in the Sun. Him and my mom used to come every year, but obviously with his sickness, he couldn't come. He wanted to know what was going on, how things were going. And that day at about 2:15, we probably talked 15, 20 minutes. I got to tell my dad, "Dad, I love you." And that was the last conversation I had with him. And man, when I found that out, of course, obviously I was devastated. Eric said, "Man, just go to the bus, pull yourself together, and I'll be out there in a little bit." So I went to the bus. He shared with all the artists before they prayed what had happened. Sorry, man, get emotional.
You're good, bud.
Get emotional telling this story. I go out on the bus by myself, trying to pull myself together. And Eric shows up, Clayton shows up, Sean shows up. You know, the guys start, they didn't even know until Eric told them in the prayer. They start showing up on the bus. And of course, I'm a basket case. I'm a mess. And all of a sudden, man, I looked up and Brian Free walks on the bus.
Wow.
Dude, I'm sitting there. I'm sitting there just a mess. And man, golly, Brian, dude, he just wrapped his arms around me and just held me and just started talking to me kind of, soft because he knew what I was going through. He went through the same thing with his dad. He was out on the road away. And dude, I was sitting there later. The next ones come on, Jeff and Susan Wisnett come on the bus. And this is all right before Singing the Sun, right before we were supposed to sing. But they didn't care, the thing had started and they were still coming out there checking on me. And so that night, Jeff and Susan, they had a car there. I was 4.5 5 hours from Goldsboro. And they said, "David, take our car. Here it is. You take it." Well, Chad, our driver, and Brian Freeze's driver, they said, "Man, we'll take you. you be sitting here as soon as this concert is in. This car's going to be sitting here. We're going to get you to Goldsboro. So those two guys, man, they got me to Goldsboro that night. They were up all night just to get me home to my family and get back to Myrtle Beach. And, of course, obviously the guy said, man, can you sing? You know, because we were singing, and within about 30 more minutes, I said, they said, can you do it? I said, it ain't a matter if I can. I said, I've got to. I said, this is what my dad would want. My dad would want me to stay here and do what I'm supposed to do, and then come home and be with the family. So that's what I did, man. I walked in, and Nicholas, I walked in. The Hoppers, they all came to me, just hugging on me while Lauren Talley was on the stage singing. They came over, all the other artists that were there that night just started just coming over, pouring into me, just praying with me and walking me through it, talking me through it. I sit there on the front row where the artists sing, and as soon as Lauren Talley, man, as soon as she walked off stage, she come straight to me because, you know, she knew I was, you know, what I was going through as well. And she found out about it through the prayer and just come straight to me, you know. And I look back on that time and people say, man, how'd you do it? And honestly, Nicholas, I didn't know how I was going to get through that night. My foot hit that first step, and man, it was like something just took a hold of me. And I know what it was. It was the Lord. I mean,
it was.
He walked me on that stage, and I got through the program. The only time I really got broken up was when Eric started doing The Goodness of God. And the reason for that is because I knew my dad wanted that sung at his funeral, which it was sung at his funeral. But my dad, man, of course, told you earlier days, singing with his group, I watched my dad, golly, at his funeral, man, at the viewing. We had over 500 people come through the line. And I knew
Wow.
My dad had made an impact on a lot of lives. I knew he had made an impact on myself, my brother, and his family. And I didn't realize, though, until then, how much of an impact he did have on so many people's lives. Just story after story with people sharing how much my dad had meant to them and the impact that he had made on their life, the encourager he had been. And so my dad was, he was my hero for sure. I tell people to this day, he was my favorite tenor. And if you've never heard my dad and you're listening to this right now, you can get on YouTube and you type in Denny and David Sutton, I'd Do It All Over Again, and you'll find
Yes.
it. My dad went to the Memphis Quartet show with us 1 year. I just had my gallbladder taken out that week, and I didn't know how I was going to be able to sing. I didn't know if it was going to hurt. I didn't know. So my dad rode with us. He was going to fill in for me if I needed him. Ended up, I was okay to sing, but I got my dad up that night. Me and him did I Do It All Over Again. And so if you want to go listen to my dad, that's where you can find him on YouTube, David and Denny Sutton, I Do It All Over Again, and you'll find the one. There may be other clips, but the one at the Memphis Quartet show was pretty special. But people ask me all the time, what would you remember most about your dad? And I think the thing that stands out to me most about my dad was when I was getting ready to join the Anchorman. My dad knew I was getting ready to travel a lot. He knew I was getting ready to be in front of a lot of people. I was going to be around a lot of people that I didn't know, a lot of people that I had grown up knowing. And my dad said, David, if I can give you any advice whatsoever, I'm going to ask you, just stay humble. And
Yep.
man, I've never forgotten my dad saying those words to me. And I've tried my hardest to be that person. I don't want it to be a fake David. I want it to be real. I want when a person sees me to say, man, he's a real guy. He's a good dude. He's a humble man. And so I hope that's what people see in me. And my dad is the one that gave me that advice many years ago.
That's awesome, man. No doubt about it. And I wish I would have been able to meet your dad for sure.
He was a good man and a great singer, great communicator.
That is awesome stuff, man. I appreciate you sharing all that, buddy.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, Hey, here's another Facebook question.
All right.
It says, "What is your favorite song of all time that you love to sing?" So I guess what is
Oh.
your favorite song you've ever been featured on, I guess?
Oh my goodness gracious. Wow. Man, that's a tough one. I've been blessed to, golly, I've had so many songs that I've recorded that I've just, a song is amazing me out of the years that I've been singing how certain songs come to you at certain seasons of your life. And some of these songs you don't sing but so long. They have their time limit. I don't know if I've ever had Ernie Haas. When I think of Ernie Haas, I think of Oh, What a Savior. When I
Right.
think of Blind Free, I think For God So Loved the World. When I think of Danny Thunderberg, I think of Somebody Touch Me. Golly, the list can just go on. I think of Archie Watkins. I'll not turn my back on him now. I just hear Archie singing that song. Kirk Tally, Serenaded by Angels, Joy on the Other Side of Jordan, Water. Man, he had so many songs.
I know a man
But
who can.
I Know a Man Who Can was huge for him. And then Chris Allman brought that song back, just like Ernie Haas brought the old song, Oh, What a Savior, back. And I don't know that I've ever had that big, big signature song. Now, Amazing God and God Is Listening were both number one songs. I don't know that they were ever the song that people were going to say one day, oh man, I remember David Sutton singing that song. That would be interesting to know for me is the people that have heard me sing for all these years, is there one song that just stands out that when you hear it, you think, that was David Sutton's song? I don't know if that song's out there or not. But Amazing God was definitely one of my favorites that I sang. I sang the old song One Day at a Time. I sang that song quite a bit on, in Triumphant's earlier days. That was a song. And I'll tell you a song that I'm doing now that I don't get tired of singing it. Sometimes a song kind of runs its course with you. And sometimes you feel like maybe you're getting a little bit burnt out with that song. I think I kind of got there with Amazing God because I sang it so many times and so many nights. But the song My Jesus that I do, I've been doing that song, the second song of the program now for,
Yep.
gosh, probably at least 2 years, maybe 3 years now. But I never really get tired of singing that song. It's crazy. That's just a song that I love. I love what it has to say. Another song that I sing is a song called Mercy. It's the song that we did on our hymns and worship recording a few years. Actually, the same song that My Jesus is on. So those two of my favorite songs that I sing, that I still sing today, are those two songs. And it's funny, Mercy kind of got kicked out of the program when God Is Listening come along as I started doing God Is Lit. I do My Jesus every night, but yeah, I try to do at least a couple features a night. So My Jesus, I've been doing, and Mercy, I sang for a couple years every night, and then God Is Listening come back, and here recently Mercy has kind of got put back into the program. Not for any really one reason, it's just gotten put back there. So those are some favorites, the old song One Day at a Time, Amazing God, Mercy, and My Jesus, and those have been four of my favorites, and I love God Is Listening. Gosh, there was one that I sang several years ago that was always a favorite, Mercy, Forgiveness, and Grace. I absolutely love that song just for what it says, that we serve a God of forgiveness, we serve a God of mercy, and we serve a God of grace. And I think that's why I like, that was called Mercy, Forgiveness, and Grace that I recorded years ago. And now I'm singing the song Mercy, which basically says the same thing. And so those have been some of my favorite, I guess, standout songs that I've had the opportunity to sing over my career in gospel music. Back when I was the Anchorman, the song that I was kind of known for during my Anchorman year, 1.5 years, was Child of the King. I sang that every night. And then I guess the song that I sang with the Singing Americans, that was a song that I sang quite a bit, was amazing. It Was Amazing, a song that Bonnie English wrote. And then another song that Savannah Faust wrote, He'll Never Let Go of My Hand. That was the two songs that I sang during that period of my career in gospel music that were pretty big songs for me.
Yep. That's awesome, man. Well, you do a great job, brother. And one thing I like about your voice is that your voice is different. Like, you don't sound like anybody else. You sound like David Sutton.
Well,
And yeah.
and that's one thing we talked about earlier. I learned early on during my Singing American days, Buddy talked to me a lot about it. Be David, be who you are. Don't try to be somebody else. And honestly, man, when I realized that, that's when I started coming into my own, I guess, and becoming more free with it, more natural with my singing.
Yep.
And thankful for it. Some people like it, and I'm sure some people don't, and that's okay. We can't make everybody happy. We have to use the gift that God's given us, and that's all I can do. And hope and pray that people will like it and people will accept it, and hopefully people will continue to book us to come see Triumphant.
Yep, for sure. Here's another Facebook question. What's a song you've always wanted to record, but haven't got the chance yet?
Oh man. Gosh, I don't know that one either. One of my favorite all-time songs is Welcome to Heaven.
Yep.
And I'll let a little cat out of the bag on this one. I'm not going to sing it, but that was a big song for the Singing Americans back in the 80s. I think Michael English did the original cut of it, but Michael left right after he had recorded that song, and Clayton joined him, and Clayton recorded that song. And man, we recorded it a few years ago with Clayton, and just recently, we've pulled that song back out. And we've been doing it close to the end of our program. And Clayton Inman, to me, he just owns that song. You're talking about a signature song. I think that would be one of Clayton Inman's signature songs. We're
Yeah.
getting ready to re-record that song.
That's awesome.
We're doing a new CD. It's going to be an EP, seven songs. We just cut tracks for it last week. Gordon Moat's going to be producing it. And Clayton come to us and said, "Guys, I think I want to bring Welcome to Heaven back with a fresh new sound, fresh track." And so he's going to be doing it. That's a song that I used to always say, "Man, I'd love to record that song," which I'm in a group with Clayton Inman, so I knew I would never be the guy to do that. And it's funny, one song that I already had in the back of my mind back when Jeff Stice was still with us, he had mentioned it to me. I was wanting to recut. I know a man who can. Because
Yep.
Kirk Colley had done it all these years, and next thing I know, Chris Allman cuts it with a Greater Vision. So that one got booted out for me. But those were, I don't
Thanks a
know,
lot,
that's
Chris.
yeah, that's two big signature songs that I grew up listening to that I always wanted to have the opportunity to record them and never did. And I don't know, who knows? Maybe I can do a solo recording one year.
Yeah.
If the funds ever come in, if there's anybody out there who wants to give David Sutton funds to do a solo recording, then I'll do it. But recording is definitely not cheap. So, but yeah, man, if I ever get to do a solo recording, I've often thought that I would love to go in and do a recording of some of my favorite tenor hits, like I Know a Man or What a Savior, different songs that tenors have done. I'll Not Turn My Back on Him Now, For God So Loved, some of those old songs that I grew up listening to that my tenor heroes. I've always wanted to go into the studio and record those songs that I thought were signature songs for other tenor singers. Another song that I did with Triumphant, that we did it for several years every night, was a song, Walk With Me. First time I ever heard that
Yes.
was Jim Murray. Jim Murray was the first guy I ever heard that song. Now, there's been other tenors do it since. Ernie Haas has done it some. Heard a couple other tenors do it. A great song. And that's a song that I think if maybe I'd have stuck with, that maybe, I don't know, maybe that would have been that song for me. I don't know. But because tenors, it does seem like that there's been tenors that have brought old songs back and become signature songs for them. And
Yep.
so I don't know. But yeah, it would be interesting from some of your listeners when they think of David Sutton, what song do you think about? And just see if there's one that stands out. I don't know. That would be interesting to know.
Yeah, that'd be really cool. And a solo CD from you featuring some of your favorite tenor features through the years, that would be really cool.
Yeah, I'd love to do that. And again, if I can ever get a chance to do it, again, biggest thing there, I think, is finances. It's not cheap to do a recording to do it right. And who
Yep.
knows? Maybe that'll happen one day. We'll see.
Yeah. Here's a question that I was curious about, and somebody posted this on Facebook as a question, and I'm glad they did because this is a cool question. Is there a song that Triumphant passed on that became a hit for somebody else? And if so, name the song and the artist.
You know what's funny about that? Me and Clayton were just having that conversation yesterday. We were at Singing in the Sun. It was us, Hoppers, Wisnitz, Lauren Talley, Brian Free and Assurance. And me and Clayton were on the bus talking. I said, you know, I said, I think there was a song that we passed on several years ago that's been a big song for the Wisnitz, and it's New Day Dawning.
Yeah.
That was a big song for Wisnitz. And,
Yep.
matter of fact, they did it last night. And I'm pretty sure that several years ago, Wayne Hahn produced many of our recordings. And I'm pretty sure Wayne brought that to a listening session for us to listen to. And, but yeah, it's funny. We were just talking about that yesterday. And Clayton said, yeah, I think you're right. I think we passed on that song because there was another song on the project that was very similar to it. So we picked that song and let that song go. But I'm pretty sure that was it, New Day Dawning. And so yeah, that's pretty interesting that you asked that question since we were just talking about it yesterday.
Yeah. Well,
But
that's pretty cool.
that's one that does jump out to me.
Yep. For sure. Well, we all know you can sing, and we all know you can play harmonica and drums, but can you play any other instruments besides those two? And if so, which ones?
No. That's it. When I was a kid, I took piano lessons for 2 years. My piano teacher moved. When my piano teacher moved, I didn't get a new piano teacher, obviously. And looking back on it now, and I tell young people all the time, if I had it all to go over with again, I wish so bad that I would have pushed my mom and dad to find me a music teacher or a piano teacher and continue to. You know, taking lessons. I say all the time, I'm gonna learn to play something. I've got over here in my office right now, I've got a bass guitar sitting there I'm looking at, and I've got an acoustic guitar I'm sitting there looking at, and I've got a piano in the other room that I look at every day. And so I always say, if I really wanted to do it bad enough, I guess I could do it. I hear it. I can sit down on a piano and I can do chords. I can make chords. And but I can't put no song together with those chords. And I think if somebody would sit down with me, they may could get it out of me. But I've never pursued it. The only thing I pursued for about 2 months was the bass guitar when Jeff Stice was with us. Jeff could play bass, and he was getting ready to start working with me on the bass. And that's when he left. And so never pursued that. That's actually when I got the bass guitar for Christmas 1 year, and I got the acoustic guitar for Christmas 1 year. And but haven't pursued it. But I tell young people all the time, while you're young, pursue it. You know, whatever instrument you feel comfortable with. The instruments that I really think are great is a piano and an acoustic guitar. And the reason I say that is pretty much everywhere you go, you can find one of those instruments. And you can play those instruments and sing along with those particular instruments. And that's one thing I do like about the acoustic and the piano. So if I had an instrument to learn, it would be one of those two, or if not both. That would be the instrument of choice for me.
Yep, for sure. I took a guitar lesson here and there years ago, but I never stuck with it.
Yeah.
But another Facebook question says this: how long did you work at the Comedy Barn in Pigeon Forge, or was that a side gig when you were with the King of Mayors? And that question was submitted by Jeff Martin, and he said that they saw you there, and he said, "Hey, I recognize him."
Okay, so that, and I hate to, okay, so somebody is a little, they are a little wrong on this. I know what they're talking about though. I never performed at the Comedy Barn, but I did perform at the Smoky Mountain Jubilee.
Okay,
And
yeah.
they're right down the road from each other. So there is a little correction there. But yes, I filled in at the Smoky Mountain Jubilee. Again, David Walker was singing tenor there. So
Wow.
this is number four. David leaves the show, and they get kind of put in a bind one night, and thought they had someone lined up, but didn't. And no joke, Nicholas, an hour before the show started, I get a phone call from Gary McVeigh. He was the music director there. He said, "David, we're in a mess. We need a tenor." They had a quartet in that show, a gospel. They sang Southern gospel and they sang some clean country stuff like Oak Ridge Boys and Statler Brothers stuff, Alabama. They did some of that. He said, "Man, is there any way you can come fill in tonight?" I said, "Gary." He said, "We start in an hour." He said, "Do you have a black suit and a white shirt?" I said, "Man, I don't know if I know any." He said, "I know you'll know our gospel stuff and you can just fake your way through the other." So I literally only lived 10 minutes from that theater at the time. I said, "Man, I'll come. I'll come do the best I can do for you." So I went, and sure, I got on stage that night and I sang with them when David had just left. So there were several nights. I don't remember how many times I went and filled in there, but I did. I filled in there for the Smoky Mountain Jubilee Quartet several nights until they found somebody. They actually offered me the position, and but I was with the Kingdom Heirs during that time, and I was totally happy where I was. And so I kind of followed David four times if you look at it that way. But yeah, it was the Smoky Mountain Jubilee is where I filled in. And that's where they would have seen me. Now, they may have. I've been to the Comedy Barn and seen two or three shows, but I've never been in the show. So I'm pretty sure that's probably what they're thinking about is seeing me at Smoky Mountain Jubilee.
Got you. Who would you say is your favorite gospel group of all time?
Oh my goodness, man! I honestly don't know that I can give you one. I can give you the groups that when I was growing up, the groups that I listened to all the time were the Cathedrals, Gold City during the Brian Free, Ivan Parker, Mike Lefevre, Tim, and Gary. That was that quartet. And the Kingsmen quartet that I grew up listening to, Little Ernie, I loved him, but he was just a little bit before my time. So the group that I listened to was the Gary Shepherd, Jim Hamill, Ed Crawford, Ray Dean, and then Arthur Rice was with them a period of that time. So those are the groups that you got Cathedrals, Gold City, Kingsmen, and I'm gonna even throw my last 2 years of high school. I'm gonna throw the Singing Americans into that lineup. Of course, obviously the Rick Strickland, Mike English, Ed Hill, Dwayne Burke. I listened to that group a lot. And then even when Clayton and Scott Wittner came in and Greg Shockley and Phil Barker, Greg and Phil flip-flop there. Even that lineup I listened to. But gosh, man, I don't know that I honestly don't know that I had a favorite because I listened to all of them equally. There was not one that I listened to more than the other. So I listened to all four of those groups pretty much equal. Now, as I got a little older, I started listening to some old Imperial recordings with Jim Murray. And of course, obviously, the Gaither Vocal Band. I listened to them. One of my favorite vocal band lineups was when Terry Franklin, Mike English, Mark Lowry, Bill Gaither. That was just one of my favorites. And my next favorite was probably when it was David Phelps, Guy Penrod, Mark, and Bill. Guy and David together were just a powerhouse. Loved to listen to them lock endings together. It was just amazing. So that was some of the groups that I've listened to in my recent. The Booth Brothers, Booth Brothers, great, great friends of ours, and just always really respected what the Booth Brothers did with their group with Michael, Ronnie, and Jim. It was just good stuff, just great material. One of my favorite groups to work with now, I'm just going to be honest with you, I would tell anybody this, I would tell any group this, I love Karen Peck and New River. I
Yes.
just love their group. I love Karen. The whole family is just, it's so sweet and just real. And to me, have some of the best songs in gospel music. Just their song selection to me is just phenomenal. And other groups, I mean, I could just go on and on groups that mean a lot to me. But again, Collingsworth family, my goodness, you don't get no better than that. Family Harmony, just talented, talented people. Some incredible groups out there. I've made a lot of incredible friends. Don't want to leave anybody out because I love them all in one way or another. And that's why I honestly don't know that I could just say one group has totally changed my life, because it's taken all of them to make me fall in love with the music.
Yep. Well, how about this? How about your favorite era of gospel music?
Favorite era for me was probably the 90s. For me,
Okay.
90, the mid 90s, mid to late 90s. Probably during about the time that I joined the Kingdom Heirs. 94 is when I joined them, but 95 to even early 2000s. For me in my lifetime, that's when the Southern gospel industry was just booming. I mean, it was just booming. National Quartet Convention in Louisville, Kentucky. I remember sitting there, 15,000 plus people there. There was just a lot of excitement. That was the biggest years for me that I've seen it. Now, some of my favorite times have obviously been since Triumphant. In the late 2000s. I'm gonna go back to 2014. 14 through 20. COVID really hurt a lot of things. When COVID come along, it's really taken a it took a toll on our whole country, but it really took a toll on our industry. I truly believe that. And it's been hard to get things back to where they were at one time. And we're doing our very best to do that, but things drastically changed. But those mid-90s, the late 90s, early 2000s, man, they were just big. Now, you talk to some older people, they're going to say that about the 80s, and that was before my time for as the full-time Southern gospel music. That's when I was traveling locally. But I know they had some really big years in the 80s as well. So, but yeah, the 90s, early 2000s, mid-2000s would definitely be mid-90s to mid-2000s were probably some of my fondest memories.
Yep. That's good stuff. And you mentioned how in the 90s gospel music was really booming. I believe maybe definitely another reason for that was because of the Gaither Homecoming videos back then.
No doubt, no doubt. Bill Gaither, he took Southern gospel to another level when he started bringing some of those old timers back.
Yes.
It made me fall in love with them. I didn't know those people. I knew of them, but I didn't really know them as people and didn't learn their hearts until I saw them on these videos. And it just gave me a new perspective for some of the older generation that I never knew. And hopefully one day when I'm there, I hope there's young people that still love it, that want to know more about me. And
Yeah.
so it again, it's he did some incredible things with the Gaither videos, and still doing it today. And he has definitely kept things alive, I feel like, in Southern gospel music for sure.
Yep. And here's something you may have not known about me, maybe. You may have, but maybe not. Speaking of those old legends, don't get me wrong, I love some gospel music in all eras. I really do, including some today and 80s, 90s, all that. But my favorite era of gospel music is the 1940s, 50s to like the mid 60s, like the Statesman, Blackwood Brothers way back then. That's my favorite era.
Oh, well, I go back, I still go back and listen to some of those old videos, and you're great. It was wonderful. Some great years. And so yeah, they definitely had some good ones.
Yeah. But that's just kind of different for me because I'm only 24, but I love that old stuff. So that's
Yeah,
kind of neat.
absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Here's something fun I'd like to do real quick. I'd like you to maybe list five gospel music albums, maybe, that you would have someone listen to if you were going to introduce someone to gospel music so they could get a good taste of it. What do you say there, maybe?
I love Symphony of Praise by the Cathedrals. I'm gonna go back and list some old ones. Double Take by Gold City years ago was one. Kingsmen Live in Opryland, that was a big one that I remember. Goodness, I'm trying to think of some newer stuff. I'm gonna mention Triumphant. Probably my favorite recording to date would be either the Yes recording that we did, or the God is Listening that we just did 2 years ago. I would definitely encourage people, and you're gonna get totally different styles there listening, because you're gonna hear some of the older stuff, and even the more recent Gold City stuff. I can't think of the name of their title of their last one. You probably know that title. My goodness, I'm drawing a blank right now.
Right now.
Yes, right now, yeah. I would definitely lean them towards that. Oh goodness. Trying to think. You want to hear of family groups again, Karen Peck and New River, any of their latest recordings. And again, I can't think of the titles right off the top of my head, but their latest two recordings are just tremendous. Collingsworth Family. Of course, any Gaither Vocal Band stuff. I think you listen to Gaither Vocal Band, you're going to fall in love with gospel music. Collingsworth Family, Karen Peck, New River, Gold City, Kingsman. So, again, I don't know all the titles right off the top of my head, but any of those groups
Yeah.
are definitely groups that I would lead people to hopefully for them to hear to fall in love with Southern gospel.
Yep. No doubt. Well, brother, I have two more things for you real quick. And these are just quick hitters here. We're gonna do something right now called the Fast Five. What this is just five simple questions that you can just answer just a simple answer to. What is your favorite food?
Any kind of pasta.
Yeah. Very good. And how about your favorite dessert?
Anything chocolate.
Anything chocolate. I like
Anything
it.
chocolate.
Yeah. How about your favorite TV show?
Oh my goodness. Me and my wife love to watch all the Chicagos. Chicago Fire, Chicago Med, Chicago PD.
Very cool. How about your favorite vacation spot?
Cancun, Mexico.
Excellent. And last but not least on this question, how about your favorite Bible verse and tell me why it's your favorite?
Jeremiah 29:11. That's been one of my favorite Bible verses for years. I know it's one that everybody hears all the time, and maybe they say it's their favorite Bible verse. But several years ago, probably 20 some years ago, I was going through something. Really, I was really at a downtime in my life, going through a situation. I didn't think I'd find myself there, but I did. And God showed up and showed mercy on me and grace on me and pulled me through it. And I walked out to the mailbox one day, and probably one of the most godly people I know is my mom. I opened the mailbox and I opened an envelope from my mom, and she had written out this verse, Jeremiah 29:11, because she knew what I was going through. She was walking with me through it. And I put that verse on the dash of my truck, right there where the speedometer is. And I drove my truck with that on it probably for the next 2 years of my life. I drove everywhere and looked at that verse every day. So that's why that's always been one of my favorites.
Well, that's
Probably.
great stuff.
Yeah.
Well, brother, my last question for you is this. If you were leaving Earth tomorrow, what do you think would be the very last song that you would sing for the world? Whole entire world could hear you.
Ooh. You know what? I'm going to go with Amazing God, because we do serve an amazing God, and He can get us through any situation. If we always turn to Him, everything's going to be okay, because He is so amazing.
Hey, man. That is great stuff. And brother, I thoroughly enjoyed doing this with you, man, and I appreciate you doing it.
Nicholas, buddy, thank you so much. Always good talking to you. Always better to get to see you, but hopefully we'll see you down the road pretty soon.
Yes,
And
sir, brother.
keep doing what you're doing, because I know people look forward to seeing your program and finding out more about the artist. And I hope you've gotten to know David Sutton a little bit better today. And I hope you know my heart and know that I love you. I love getting to do what I get to do, but I love people. And that's why I do what I do, to share Jesus with people. And hopefully I can be an impact on somebody's life, and hopefully I can be an encouragement to someone. So love you, buddy, and thank you for the opportunity.
Yes, sir. You've been a good friend to me through the years, buddy, and I appreciate you.
Absolutely. Thank you, Nicholas. You have a great day.
You too, brother. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Southern Gospel Conversations podcast. We hope you enjoyed it, and please be sure to share it with everyone you know. Tune in 2 weeks from today for another episode of the Southern Gospel Conversations podcast.